I'm Nicole.
And I'm Monica.
And we're two fangirls who like to talk about media and knit. This is our podcast, While We Were Knitting. This month, we listened to an audio novella, Every Heart a Doorway, written by Seanan MacGuire and read by Cynthia Hopkins. It's the first novella in a series called Wayward Children, about children who have gone to fantasy world through a portal and then returned back to our world and are having trouble adjusting. This month, I knit Candy Stripe Stroll by Cynthia Work.
I knit the snowflake sweater by Tin Can Knits.
Monica, I had actually heard of this series before we had decided to listen to it and to add it to the potential rotation. I had heard of it because it was a big winner in terms of like the Hugo and the Locus and all those big awards back in like 2016. So it's been out for a while. And it also feels like the one of the earlier novellas that was put out by Tor.com before they kind of went on their like business model of like almost entirely novellas, which to be clear, I love a Tor.com novella, so I am very pro. But this feels like one of the earlier ones when they were still kind of testing the water. So how did this come into your life?
Oh, I've been a Seanan MacGuire fan for many, many, many years. I'm pretty sure I have read the vast majority of not just her books, but her short stories and her novellas. I was very into the other series that she wrote, where about the cryptozoology. It's an entire series about a family of crazy cryptozoologists and their interactions with, the rest of the world. And so when this came out, I kind of assume, being as how it was sort of in the same urban fantasy genre, that it was going to be a spin-off of that particular series, because that series has, like, I think 12 novels and something like 40 short stories as part of it. It's huge. So I had kind of assumed this was going to be a like sort of a sideways spin-off. It is not, completely different. I was not mad about that, but I just really enjoy her prose, so.
That's fair. Yeah, I have read her. I've read a couple things by her. I really liked her Mira Grant Mermaids novel. That like freaked
Out
me out when I was
the,
a
what is
kid.
it, the deep, something, the deep. Yeah. Yes,
Yeah,
I know what you're
something.
talking about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mermaids That Eat People. Great
Yes.
novel. One of the things that, and like, I'm not as versed in her works, but one of the things I did appreciate about this novella was like, I was like, this is some very cool world building. This is an interesting idea that she's clearly thought about the implications that this could have if you have children who are going back and forth through portals and how that would work and how they would be that way. And I mean, I think for even before that kind of 2016 timeframe, people had been pointing out how the Narnia kids would have been like real messed up by that experience. But to extrapolate that further and say, okay, well, not only if it's one portal fantasy, but if there are different portals, what does that look like? Was very cool. And I did enjoy that a lot. There were a couple of ways that I struggled with this novella. One of them was because I felt like she didn't trust me as a reader to understand her world building. Because she kept like explaining it and being like, oh, well, nonsense means this and logic. And I'm like, yes, I got that. You didn't have to give me like a 5-minute description of what is going on with like your world building. It's a novella. You don't have a lot of time. Like, just assume that I get what you're going for. You're not making up words. Those are words that I know, and I can extrapolate based on what you've given me of the world that these children have gone to, what these phrases mean. And that I struggled with a little bit. Because I was like, I've read a fantasy novella. And I struggled with the fact that Nancy, our main character, who had gone to the world of the dead, come back, and then been sent to this school for children who are not really adjusting very well and want to go back to a portal fantasy, wasn't very genre savvy because, like, she didn't understand. And that was how many things were explained to us through having things explained to Nancy. And I'm like, you're not very good at this. And that was also, I think, a little difficult for me.
I can see that, though I find it funny because some of the other people who I have had reading this book, they were like, they actually wanted the explanation. Like, I didn't need it.
No.
I am very well savvy, like, in fantasy genres, and the whole idea of, like, nonsense logic like good and evil, wicked versus good, and that not necessarily being like a value judgment call was not something that I found difficult to understand. I think the nonsense versus logic is pretty easy for most people to get, but the idea that a world that where death is venerated, for example, or the mad scientist world where Jack and Jill came from is not inherently evil, I think it's a hard concept, especially for younger readers, because I think a lot of, especially young adult fantasy or children's fantasy, tends to have a very polarized idea of death is bad, you know, experimentation on experimentation is by necessity evil, you know, that kind of thing. I think the logic nonsense thing people would get pretty easily, but like the whole idea of the compass, I've known people who have absolutely loved that explanation. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm glad
Yeah, I
it
think that does begin to raise, at least in my mind, because I haven't really done a deep dive, but to me at least, those series of novellas, and Tor.com is putting out a lot of novellas, so it's obviously for a lot of different audiences, but because it is a speculative fiction that press that does sci-fi and fantasy, to me it was like, okay, I am in a lot of ways like as a science fiction and fantasy reader, the audience for this, and you don't have to explain it to me. I will get it. I will follow. And I think the other piece that I was like, I have already gotten this and you keep dragging it out, was I was pretty sure that Jill was the murderer from like two, like maybe 2 minutes after they discovered the first body. They were like, so, Sumi is killed, Nancy's roommate, and they're like, who could have done this? And then they're like, well, it couldn't have been this person because the bathrooms where you would have to wash the blood off are in this communal place and somebody would have heard us. And then like 5 minutes later, you're like, oh, Jack and Jill have their own private bathroom downstairs. I'm like, and it's obviously not Jack. Like, it's obviously not the crazy mad scientist. Like, I'm genre savvy enough to know this. It is obviously the fluffy pastel vampire situation who is murdering people.
Fluffy vampire. I love the way you describe
That's what
that.
she is. And I'm like, and then they spent the next, that was like halfway through the book. And I'm like, and now you're going to spend the next like part of the book, because I kept being like, are you going to tell us as the reader that this is who is doing the murders, even if the main characters are still trying to figure it out? Because they were like, oh, Jill went to ask the body of the second dead girl who was killed, and she pointed next to her. I'm like, I know who did the murders. We have like established this. And the only reason why I was like, maybe it wasn't Jill, was because I was aware that there were two characters called Jack and Jill, and I was aware there was a sequel novella. And I was like, it would be
That's
really
true.
hard to pull off. And I didn't realize that it was actually a prequel novella, because I didn't really look into this. I just have been aware of this property, and I'd re like recalled those two names because Jack and Jill went up the hill. We all know it. So that was the only time where I was like, maybe it's not Jill. Maybe it's secretly the third person who got murdered, the like tutor psychiatrist
Oh,
person.
what's her name? Starts with a U. Yes.
But I was like, I'm not very sure that it's Jill. That was, I think, a little annoying for me.
I don't think I knew. Obviously, it's been a long time since I read this novella, so I can't actually remember what I was thinking when I first read it. I don't think I did know it was Jill.
Yeah. I think the fact that that clue was dropped so close together, I was like, oh, okay, I see what you did there. And I think part of it is that because in a novella, there's not a lot of time to lay down red herrings. This is not a long book. There's not a lot
Lundy, that's the name of
of. Oh,
the,
yeah.
yes,
Lundy is the
yes.
psychiatrist.
Well, I mean, and she ends up, well, being killed. But I do think I remember I first thought it was actually her. But yes, no, I, yeah.
So yeah, there isn't like a lot of time to lay false trails, but it was frustrating to be like, they're like, who could be doing this? I'm like, it's Jill. It's Jill. I've been saying it's Jill for the last hour. So that was like, I don't know. That was like, might have been a me thing. I was also having like a weird month, which I think probably explains like some of my reaction to this book, where I might have like, okay, if you don't want to hear about dead bodies, skip the next 2 minutes. So like they found the body, the dead body of the kid, and they were like, oh, we were going to carry her and we have to do all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, listen, I have dealt with like my cat's dead body within the last 2 weeks. The fact that you're not mentioning rigor mortis as a thing is like you failed to do your research here. I'm like, she would be stiff. She would be stiff and I would have to navigate her stiffness. And they were just like, not. They were like, yeah. And then we moved her body like this. And I'm like, she's dead. So yeah, again, it was a weird couple months for me. And I was also just having some reactions to that as well. So
Well, fair enough.
yeah, but I did find that I really liked Jack and Jill. Like, even though Jill was murdering people, I was very into like that whole situation. And I was like, maybe I'll read the second book because I did enjoy them a lot. And I did like Cade, who,
I think Kate is everyone's favorite, typically. Yeah.
yeah, well, he's like really like first of all, very kind, which sometimes is nice to have. And then also the way that his being trans interacts with the fantasy portal world and like the rules and the logic of a world where it's like we are looking for a fairy princess, basically. And that's not who you are, even though that's what your outsides were initially telling us, and the rejection of who he is, but also his like, I don't want to go back. If you can't accept me for who I am, like screw you, was like I think very interesting in both the pointing out kind of the limits of like fantasy world and how we gender them in very specific ways, and also just pointing out like why there might be some kids who don't want to go back to their portal world. Because so many of the other characters in this book, almost all of them are like, I want to go back. I want more than anything to go back. And I understand that there's other sequels where they explore the school where their kids are like, oh, I don't want to go back. And in fact, that was a horrible and traumatic experience. And I'd like to forget about it as soon as possible, which was, I think, a good piece of world building to have those two kind of situations and funnels to show where kids would be reacting to this, like, very startling and potentially traumatic experience.
I think a good part of the interest of like a lot of the worlds is that, some of the worlds are definitely what we would describe as horrifying, right? And whether or not the kid wants to go back to them has nothing to do with the horror of the world, So for example, Sumi's world is all candy and sweetness and light and insanity. It's completely bonkers. And it's made her unable to like cope with focus in the real world. She can't sit down to have a conversation. She can't stop moving because her entire world is nonsense, even though we think of Candyland as being someplace that is desirable. And then you have Nancy, where like her entire world is stillness. It's, she can't wear colors anymore. She can't like look at people, that kind of thing. But for her, like her descriptions of how beautiful that idea was to her, like standing there like a statue for years and years, being fed drops of pomegranate juice, and that was her beauty, even though this is like, it sounds like torture to a lot of us. But yeah, I think that was the whole thing. And like Cade, as this like glorious hero in this world, he kills the Goblin King, and the Goblin King names him his heir. He's like, you look like a princess, but you're actually a prince, and that's why I'm giving you this role. And that's when he's like, oh, this is who I actually really am, and it's who I've always been. And it, unfortunately, by the rules of his kingdom, he can't go back because of that, or he wouldn't want to in any case. But yeah, I mean, for me, that was a lot of the pleasure of the book. It was, I mean, sure, the murder mystery was interesting. I did find it interesting. The murder mystery is interesting. The school is really cool. But for me, like, I'm like, no, let's go back to these worlds the kids came from. I want to hear more about them.
That was very cool. Like, I really liked hearing about the world of the second girl whose name I'm blanking on, who got murdered with the eyes and like the little fairy, like very miniature, and she's like a tracker, and her mother, the queen, was waiting for her back in her bedroom, just waiting for her to look. And then she never went back there. And I found that actually very touching. Like, I found the description really interesting. I found the reactions of the inhabitants to the world where she doesn't come back to be very touching. And I found the idea that Nancy's Lord of the Dead, what is, I don't remember what his name is, whatever, the Lord of whatever of her world was like, we need you to be sure. We need you to really want to be sure. And she's like, I am sure. And what you find out at the end is what he meant is you not only have to have a future in our world, you need to be able to have a future in the world you came from and still want to come back. Because it's not until Nancy acknowledges, like, okay, I could stay at this school. I could grow into a position where I am assisting Kate once he becomes the head of the school with these children and helping them adjust. And that would be a life that wouldn't hurt me. Like it would, I would find fulfillment in that. And she still wants to go back to her world that they're like, okay, yes, you can come back. And I did find that very powerful because I liked that they were like, no, she could have a life here, but also that they're like, please come back. And she chooses to come back.
It's not like Kate or Lundy, who neither of them can go back to their world because either they can't, because Lundy, or they no longer fit in that world, and they don't no longer fit in the world they came from either.
That was really compelling. And I think the further sequels, I guess I haven't read them, but do the further sequels devote like the other worlds a little bit more? Okay.
I think in the third, I want to say in the third book, they actually end up going to one, a group actually ends up like voyaging to one of the, one of the confection worlds. And so, yes, the some of the other worlds do get further developed.
The way that she describes the world, like the prose that she uses to describe the worlds, are beautiful though. It's like just very, like the way that she describes the world of the dead, you're like, I see why Nancy finds this place beautiful. Like the way that it's been described shows not only like the pleasure that she took out it and why she fit there so well, but also shows me as somebody who would not enjoy any of these things. Like the horror, not the horror, but like kind of the horror that like lurks behind all of those, where it's like, oh, you have to be still or somebody will notice you. Like it tells me about Nancy, but it also tells me about the world. And I thought that was very deftly done.
I mean, Kate being trans aside, I did appreciate that Nancy was like very ex subtly, explicitly, I guess, depending on how you're looking at it, was very explicitly asexual and was most likely aromantic. And I'm like, you know what? Good for you for like making, giving your main character that whole like storyline that flirting is safe, anything else doesn't feel safe. And it's not because of trauma, that's just the way she is. And she is happy to be like that, and she is content, and it's fine being just the way she is. And I'm like, you know what? Good for you, Nancy. Awesome for you.
That was another thing where I was like, this is good. I wish he would stop explaining it to
It's
me.
a little preachy. That part does get kind of preachy.
Yeah, and I think part of it was just 2016 was a different time, and I don't, again, I don't think I'm necessarily the audience for this, where it's like, explain what an asexual person is. It's like I'm familiar with the concept. Like we could just like high level talk about it, but like we don't need to be like, and every three chapters, let us remind you. Oh God, we can go a
That's
little past
true.
it. But
It is,
that,
it does get a little preachy.
you know, it, I don't think it was a bad thing for a main character to have. And I think it also was helpful because it helps explain what the relationship that she has to the Lord of the Dead, and also helps explain her relationship with Cave of like, these are not women relationships. These are platonic relationships. Or maybe they're romantic, but they're not sexual is probably the better way to put that, because we don't know if she's aromantic. We just know that she's asexual. So that's my mistake. But like, this is a specific relationship, and this is how this relationship functions. And I think that did help explain who she was and like kind of the choices that she was making and why she was making those choices. And it was very, it was interesting as well. And this was, I think, done a little less explicitly, but the way the relationship that Jack and Jill also had to gender was like very interesting, because Jill is performing this very like pastel, ruffled, in what turns out to be a lot of ways weaponized high femininity, where Jack is performing like a very butch femininity, but is still, you know, uses she, her, and identifies as a girl, but is like I only wear suits and ties with bow ties and like is doing something very
I
different.
love Jack. I think Jack is my favorite.
Jack is the best. Jack,
Yeah.
like Kate is good. Like I like Kate a lot, but it's like, yeah, I'll read a book about this person. And I was really interesting to be like, oh yeah, no, like when we were kids, I was the pretty one and Jill was the smart one. I was like, all right, that's interesting. That's a very interesting take on that situation.
Yeah, it's the whole idea of you went to the world and you discovered who you really were, and then when you came back, everyone wanted to be what you used to be, but you're not that person anymore, you know?
And there's also that interesting line, and it's kind of a throwaway, but I found it interesting of we only see the children who come back. Like we don't see the children who are in some ways not adapted to the world that they end up with and who end up dead. Like we don't see them. And that was like, I think, a good point. And also helps build out the world larger and helps set you up for the kids in the school who want to forget of like, oh, this was not a good fit for you, or maybe it was a good fit in certain ways, but something bad happened. And also they have that talk with the one of the other students where they're like, yeah, you were running on rainbows all the time. What happened to the kids who slipped off the rainbows? Where'd they go? One thing that I did find a little lacking was they kept trying to make the other students a threat in a way. Like the way Sean and Maguire was setting up was like, oh no, the other kids will think I do it and that's going to be a problem. I'm like, are they dangerous to you? Like, are they physically dangerous to you? Because that is kind of the way you seem to be implying, but it's not like really a thing. Like, because they're talking about it with Christopher, who also went to the world of the death with a
Yeah,
skeleton.
the end of the smartest world. Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I don't talk about my world because people think it's like socially unacceptable, but like it doesn't. I didn't think that fully was executed. I think that's part of it being so short is that you couldn't push that out as much of like the distinction between the kids who went to the world that was like so-called good versus the kids who went to the world that was so-called wicked. And that just, I couldn't understand the threat because I'm like, oh, they might socially exclude you. Oh no, there's a murderer running around. This is not your biggest
I
problem.
mean, they're teenagers, though. The risk of being socially excluded is like worse than death for a lot of people who are
Yeah,
that
that's, I don't know. It just didn't work for me in this situation because I'm like, oh, you're already like weirdos. Like, all of you are weirdos from the situation that you came in. That is why you ended up at the school. You have already gone through social exclusion. The fact that you're like, oh no, they might think we're bad. I'm just like, well, that, sure, whatever. So.
I mean, that one I can kind of see. Like, you can be in a school of weird, like being excluded in a school where all of you are already weirdos is like a double hit. You know, this is the place where you were supposed to be accepted. This is the place you went because no one else would have you, and even they won't have you. That's pretty bad.
I mean, like, I see what you were saying. It was just that I think if it had been a situation where there wasn't a murderer running around, it
Yeah,
had been a
people are
situation.
dying. It's legit. Yeah, being excluded is not your biggest problem
And, like, I was
here.
like, oh, well, is it, like, dangerous to be excluded because that means you have less protection? And then I was like, no. None of these kids have protection. The best protection that they can have is Ellie being like, if you come from a nonsense world, I will let you come to my world. But like, none of these kids have protection. So I'm like, social exclusion is not going to make things worse. And you don't want to be here. You're not like, I really want to make friends. Most of you are like, screw all this. So I'm like, so what if you keep trying to present this to me as a threat or as an issue, and I just don't buy it. Like,
That's
I
fair.
buy it in terms of like a social atmosphere of school, but I don't buy it as a threat. Another thing that I struggled with. I think part of the reason why like that social distinction between the wicked and the good was like I understood it and I was like, okay, gotcha. But like because you are so firmly on the side of the children who are went into the quote unquote wicked world, I was like, no, like I mean, obviously these worlds are kind of messed up, but like it was correct for the children to end up there, to end up there. And it was no more fundamentally wicked than the children falling off the rainbows. It was just aesthetically.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Yes, it was aesthetically, but like the good worlds have their own kinds of danger. They're just packaged differently. And the wicked worlds have their own kind of like wonders that, again, just packaged in a different form.
And I mean, part of it is also I love a pomegranate underworld Persephone theme thing. Like, I'm not gonna lie, absolutely love that for me. And we've actually, when we went out to Wool & Co., I bought a yarn for the pomegranate sweater by
You
Bonnie
did.
Sandel. And that is where I would get inspired by this because I'm like, I love a pomegranate mythology.
I thought you were going to say you were going to knit those skeleton gloves.
No, that's a good one.
Yeah.
But no, I
Yeah.
was like, pomegranates all the way.
I like the pomegranate mythology. The what I was thinking of is actually a pattern that I have meant to knit forever and just have never really gotten around to it. It's the wingspan pattern by I think you know what I'm talking about, but yes, with the like long cascading gradient wings, because for me that's sort of the epitome of a like fairyland kind of wingspan kind of thing. I've been meaning to knit that forever. I just never have gotten around to
Listen,
it.
I will tell you when I start knitting my pomegranate sweater, and that'll be your cue. You're like, now is the time for me to
It's
knit my
true.
wingspan.
I have the yarn for it, so.
Let's have our yarn. I like
Yeah.
how like the aesthetics of this book fit both so well into
Yeah.
our like personal aesthetics. We're like, yeah, we know exactly what I would knit for this book. And also I'm planning on knitting it and I have the yarn for it.
Yep. It kind of needs to happen, I suppose. But did your current pattern, was it a good fit for the for your listening?
It was. So, well, I messed up, but I had messed up like previously on the shawl because I brought it to Knit Night. But it's a shawl that interestingly starts at the edge of the like lace edging, and then as you go up and go in, it becomes striped with just a little bit of slip stitches.
Yeah.
So I got to it at kind of the top of the edging, the beginning of the stripes. So the fact that it's at the bottom means that you are doing a repeat of the same, 20 some odd stitches, like 20 times. So by the time you make it through like three or four repeats, I was just like, I got it down. I know what I'm doing. And I could just kind of keep going and go back and forth with that. So it was actually a good combo with this book. And I also listened to it at 1.5 speed because I listened to all audio at 1.5 speed just because I listen to a lot of audio, and if I listened to it at regular speed, that would be even more audio. So for me, it wasn't a super long listen because it's not a long book. Like
No,
some of the
it's not.
stuff that I'm talking about that I had issues with, I'm like, I think they would have been resolved or fleshed out in a more satisfying way if there had been like 200 more pages to this book to just build in. And I'm not super familiar with Shonen Noir, but it seems like she has set this world up as like a novella where they're all standalone. So that's not what she's planning on doing with this, and that's fine. But there's not a lot of novellas that I really want to have fleshed out because I love a short little snippet of like, here's a story. It's going to be under 200 pages. It's going to be pretty self-contained. Love a tor.com novella, but some of them I do think should have been longer. And I think this isn't one of the ones that should have been longer. There's only been like two or three where I'm like, this should have been longer because it's a longer story. But that was my, like, sometimes when I'm reading something as a writer, I'll be like, what would have fixed this for me if it's not working? And that was kind of what, for me, I think would have worked. How was your shawl with the situation? Or the sweater, sorry, snowflake sweater. I got confused. How do you say?
It was quite perfect because the snowflake sweater has like I had just started the sweater and there's a it's essentially a long stretch of pretty complex lace as in you're not looking away from that chart. And so I think that if I had been knitting this while I was watching something, there would have been shenanigans. So the fact that I was knitting it while I was listening to something and something that I had already listened to before was perfect for me. I just about finished most of the lace as the book was finishing, and I do listen to them at regular speed because the squeakiness of fast forward doesn't work for me. And so I was glad to have it because then I finished up what could have otherwise been a very frustrating section of Lace.
Yeah, I mean, that is, I do actually find that very impressive because I feel like, and again, this is new to me. So, it's when you're listening to something or watching something new versus revisiting something you've already experienced, I feel like if I had done anything that was like slightly more complex, like there would have had to have been some pausing and being like, okay, let me think about this because it was an absorbing story. Like, even with the issues that I had with it, I was like, yeah, this is like a solid story, even if you and I had not been reading it for, well, quote unquote, reading for it for the podcast, I think I still would have probably finished. And I have DNF'd a like non-zero number of like books for teens lately because I am no longer a teen and like, I don't know, the teeniness of it all has like, I don't know, it's been very evident in certain YA books lately where I'm just like, you're having too many feelings, and you're having feelings that are appropriate for your developmental stage and probably resonate with your readers who are teens. I am not that person. I think I've mentioned this before, but I always get sucked in because they, in my library branch, they have the teen section next to the holds. So I'll be getting my hold, and I'll be like, oh, that looks like cover. And I'll go over and I'll read the like little back page or read the thing. I'll be like, oh, that sounds like an interesting proposition. And then they're teens, and it's not working for me. So.
Yeah, I think for me, that's one of the reasons why this works well as a novella rather than as a full-length novel. Because I think as a full-length novel, it probably would have had to get into a lot more of the teeniness of it. And my tolerance for that, as a general rule, is fairly limited at this stage of my
That's fair.
life.
Neither of us have been teens for quite some time.
No, and yes, the whole I didn't have massive emotions even when I was a teen, so
Yes.
reading about it now is very tough
I had a lot of
on me.
emotions, but I'm also far enough away from these emotions now that I'm like, that was extremely disproportionate to the like situation you were in. Yeah. I mean, I think I might read Jack and Jill's novella.
I think you will like it. Well, I mean, I enjoy these things as a general rule, but yes, it is very separate from the whole ideal of the school because obviously it's just them in the moors. But I remember it being memorably enjoyable. And I listened to that as an audiobook. I never actually read that as a real book.
Okay,
Yeah.
yeah. I did
So,
think that the reader did a good job, to be
yeah.
honest.
Yeah.
Like, she gave each of the characters a distinct voice.
I love it when audiobook readers do that. I really
Yes,
do. Yeah,
yes. And this is our third, is this our third audiobook? I think
second?
so. No,
Is it
because
our
we
third?
had Ice Planet Barbarians and we had
Oh, you're right. And then Princess
Princess
Floralinda.
Floralinda.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know how I feel about male narrators after Ice Planet Barbarians, which are, is that they're acceptable, but having one of them read a sex scene to me is homophobia. That is homophobia. I did like her work in that. And I don't know if she narrates the other ones, but
I think she does. Yeah.
So I think we did a good job this week. Like, I think I this was the first one where we walked in and I was like, okay, I know that you've listened to this book previously because when we were talking about audio novellas initially, this was one that you proposed. And I was like, you know what? I don't think I had that same reaction to it that Monica did, but I was like, okay, we're gonna walk in, we're gonna talk about it, we're gonna like talk about what worked and what didn't for like both of us. And I think good. Like our first episode where we didn't agree on everything.
I mean, I know that I can't remember what it was, a previous episode where you were worried I was not gonna like something, and I
Was it
did.
Fleabag?
Yes, it was definitely
Yeah.
Fleabag. Oh my God, just even thinking about that, I'm getting a little bit of humiliation cringe. But yes.
Like, listen,
Yes, I would never have watched that if not for you.
listen, I knew that was going to be a challenging one for you, so thank you for going through that once again. And you know what? Like, this was one that was a little bit of a challenging one for me for various reasons. I mean, and you know, maybe when I'm in a like different place in my life where I'm like not going through some weird stuff, I will have more tolerance for some of the like more
Shenanigans.
narrative, like explanatory pieces.
I can see that. And I also feel like the later books have, even though they are standalones, have established that, all right, you're already in this Maybe we don't need so much explanation. At least I think so.
Well, that's something that I feel like also happens in a lot of like fantasy and sci-fi novels that are romance novels, like fantasy and sci-fi romance novels specifically, where like the first book they do a lot of exposition, and like by book two or three, they're kind of like, okay, like we will remind you of what's going on, like really, like let's remind you of all the rules, but like we're not gonna kind of do so much exposition at you. And
You
I think that,
mentioned that about the Ice Planet Barbarians, because
yes.
this is the we read the second book, whereas the first book was the one which had a lot more explanation. But I thought the second book was fine without it. So,
No, it worked perfectly fine. Like, I feel like sometimes authors are telling, or at least this is the way I feel, at least, are telling themselves the story as well as telling you, the audience, the story. So there are things, at least, and this is what I do. This is why I'm saying maybe other authors do it too, is they're like, I need to understand this because it's going to drive the way I think about X, Y, Z. But maybe you as a reader didn't need those details, but like you as a writer needed them. So you say it in them, or you write it down because you're like, oh yeah, this, I need to know this, but like it sometimes doesn't serve the needs of the reader as well.
I can see that.
It's very funny because we spent all this time talking about like whether or not teen stuff worked for us. And I'm like, well, next month we are going to watch something made for toddlers. Weirdly, like, I don't know. Like, for me at least, like, things made for kids have a higher hit rate than things made for teens. For
Agreed.
me personally, at this point in my life. So, next month we're going to watch some episodes of Bluey, which is a show literally made for toddlers by the Australian Broadcast Company, which is about animated dogs. And it's even shorter. It's 7 minutes long. So that will be very exciting. Or 7 minutes episode each. We'll be watching a couple episodes. But all right, well, thanks so much. Bye.
Bye.